You're listening to World Affairs. I'm Ray Suarez.
A major medical hurdle was crossed with the discovery by Dr. Jonas Salk of the anti-polio vaccine.
The first vaccine selfie may well have been taken by Jonas Salk in 1953. Salk had just developed his revolutionary vaccine against polio, but the treatment was still considered experimental. Later that year, Salk was photographed giving the shot to his own son, demonstrating his faith in the vaccine he had invented.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis Presley. You ain't nothing
but... A few years later, Elvis went on the Ed Sullivan Show, but first, he got his polio shot backstage in front of a row of photographers.
This is Elvis Presley. I ask you to listen. The fight against polio is just as tough as it ever was.
Vaccination rates among American teenagers skyrocketed. You've probably seen political leaders participate in publicity campaigns like this as they fight rampant misinformation around COVID vaccines. President Biden received his first COVID shot on live TV. So did Dr. Anthony Fauci and former Vice President Mike Pence. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world, public health workers are still using the strategy in their ongoing fight against polio. Worldwide, polio cases have dropped by 99% in the past three decades, but the virus is still creeping its way along the Afghan-Pakistani border. We haven't quite wiped it out, and vaccine hesitancy is particularly to blame. Aisha Raza Farooq is a senator in Pakistan. She served as the prime minister's focal point for polio eradication from December 2013 to July 2018. When Farooq took the job, many high-risk communities didn't trust the country's vaccination program. And it's not hard to see why.
A mansion on three floors, high security walls, a place built to hide someone important.
In Abbottabad on Sunday, one SEAL team climbed to the third floor of the Bin Laden house and came face to face with America's public enemy number one.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
You probably remember first hearing the news in 2011. A small team of Navy SEALs had stormed a compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan, and killed Osama bin Laden. What you might not have heard about is the way the CIA gathered intelligence as they prepared for the raid. Agents organized a fake vaccination program in Abbottabad, which they used to collect DNA samples from local children. They were attempting to locate bin Laden's family. Anti-vaxxer conspiracy theories were already rampant in parts of Pakistan. When the story broke about the CIA's fake vaccination drive, it made some of those theories feel true.
That had huge ramifications for a country like Pakistan. And we had to work very hard. And as you would know yourself, these suspicions are not easy to overcome.
I want to talk more about that lack of trust, because that was one of the most striking things looking at Pakistan from outside the country. There was a high degree of suspicion, rumors circulating about the real effect of the vaccine, lack of support from religious leaders. What were the sources of this disinformation campaign, and how did you combat it?
Well, that was one of the biggest challenges we faced. It came from all sources. It came from social media platforms, which included Facebook, it included Twitter. And as you know, it's been documented now that fake news and negative news spreads much faster than does factual news here. It came from some ill-informed religious scholars. In Pakistan, the illiteracy rate is pretty high. We, you know, tend to believe in conspiracies.
Farooq says many Pakistani anti-vaxxers believe vaccines are part of a Western agenda.
And they're trying to mess with our genetics here and so forth. Here's a country where we tried to put in a program that was completely driven by data, based on scientific data here. And yet when someone says this vaccine causes infertility, it is a Western agenda, we try to support it with numbers and try to tell them that we live in a country which is growing at 2.4% per annum. And if there was anything there that caused infertility, we wouldn't see the population growth rates that we see at the moment.
But the misinformation can be tough to argue with.
When I took over the program in December 2013, the year following was one of the worst that Pakistan ever saw in its polio eradication history. We reported 306 cases in 2014. This was a time when transmission was widespread across the country. There were consistent and targeted attacks against our polio workers.
Protecting children from polio with a few simple drops of vaccine has become a dangerous task.
On Tuesday, gunmen shot to death six Pakistani women who were working on a UN and government-backed polio vaccination campaign.
2012 onwards, I think we've had almost 100 casualties involving our brave female as well as male health workers. When refusal rates were very high, we were consistently missing children. And one reason Pakistan was missing children was because of the hugely migrant population Pakistan has. You would vaccinate them in their homes, but when it was time to vaccinate them the next time around, they were on the move.
Farooq says most of these families are on the move for economic reasons. A quarter of the country's population lives below the global poverty line, and Farooq says the country's remote communities are more concerned with more common diseases, like dysentery. Polio is just rare enough that many communities don't know how dangerous it is. Meanwhile, the polio virus is still mutating, and when Farooq took over in 2013, cases were still rising.
So there was a need to launch a reinvigorated program, and that's exactly what we did, with the political commitment coming from the highest office of the Prime Minister. So some of the things we did were, one, we established, we changed the culture of the way the program was being planned and implemented across the country. We established emergency operations centers with the concept of one team working under one roof led by the government, but with all partners working with the single mission of polio eradication. We set clear management and accountability structures with the Prime Minister leading in the center and our chief ministers leading in the provinces and all district administration on board at the district level and the union council level. We also at that time put our over 250,000 brave frontline workers at the center of the program, knocking at every door in Pakistan to vaccinate, yes, close to 40 million under five children.
Vaccinating 40 million children under the age of five is a tall order. And Farooq knew how dangerous health workers' jobs could be, so she focused on increasing their security.
We engaged very closely with our law enforcement agencies that provided us all kind of support that we needed, from cordoning off areas at the time of polio vaccination campaigns to sharing intelligence reports of any untoward suspicious activity in local areas so that we would defer campaigns if required, of making sure that in case of a targeted attack, they would catch the culprit very promptly to make sure that no such incident would happen in the future. And that's one reason we saw a huge improvement and we saw a decrease in our targeted attacks towards our vaccinators. And that's one reason that allowed them access to our hard-to-reach areas where the program was unable to access previously. They could go and access every house in Pakistan. They could work freely. They could work safely and in a relaxed atmosphere. And that, of course, improved their interaction with the caregiver at the door. That improved our coverage of children. Proved to be hugely successful.
Farooq also focused on community outreach. Under her leadership, Pakistan fought anti-vaxxer conspiracies at a grassroots level.
Of course, this was a time when there was a widespread misperception, miscommunication, fake news surrounding a polio vaccine itself. And that is when we worked very hard to build broad community support and get acceptance for the vaccine. And we had to work at the local levels with the right influencers, what would work in the north, what would work in the south, who did we need to work with in our tribal areas. So we had a multi-pronged approach over here. We did establish a religious scholars task force in our high-risk areas where we got on board, we engaged with shared technical data with our religious persons who had influence in the local community. We engaged with pediatricians who had more of a say in our urban areas. We engaged with our tribal elders in our tribal areas. And we sold the idea to them, told them how the same vaccine had been used all over the world. It had been used in other Muslim countries to eradicate polio, and it worked. I mean, slowly and gradually, when we infiltrated these groups, we used all kinds of political parties, support, NGOs, civil support groups. It all worked. And we saw a gradual, a steady decrease in our refusals, an acceptance of the vaccine, where people were coming forward. And we worked with all political parties despite our huge political differences. On every front, polio was one area where everyone decided to work together for the welfare of our children.
One of the things that we're emphasizing here in the United States, where there is a great deal of suspicion and a great deal of misinformation circulating about a coronavirus vaccine, is having prominent Americans publicly take the vaccine, both medical and political personalities. Were those kind of gestures, those influences, important in your campaign, showing, look, here, we're having our own children vaccinated. We wouldn't do that if we were afraid they would be harmed.
Yes, yes, that certainly was a very important communication strategy that we did employ. So whenever there was time to start a national immunization campaign, we would have sometimes the Prime Minister launch the campaign. We would have the Chief Ministers launch it, as well as in areas where we thought more than political leaders, it was the tribal leader or the religious leader, a mosque imam that would do the trick. We would request him or her to administer the vaccine to his own child. And yes, that went a long way. And so did fatwas by religious scholars help achieve the same for us.
Polio survivors occasionally helped as well.
We've utilized polio victims, you know, in without having to put them in a difficult position, tried to build trust in hard-to-reach communities, in high-refusal households, to say that, you know, here is a polio victim, here is a parent who refused vaccination. Most of the polio cases in Pakistan were because parents refused vaccine, not because our teams couldn't access those households.
Farooq's goal was to vaccinate 40 million children under the age of 5.
When I left the program, we were almost vaccinating all of them. And refusal rates had been lowered to their lowest ever of less than 1%.
She says she was hoping to interrupt transmission in 2018, but a general election in Pakistan disrupted her plans. Farooq's party lost power, and Prime Minister Imran Khan became Prime Minister. His new administration appointed its own cabinet members, and Farooq left her post. Under Khan's leadership, Pakistan's polio eradication program has come under fire. In 2019, virologists reported an alarming rise in infections. There were more than 10 times more polio cases in Pakistan than there'd been just the year before. Farooq's successor was accused of covering up the outbreak. For her part, Farooq says Khan's government grossly mismanaged Pakistan's polio crisis. In a 2019 interview with The Guardian, she said the vaccination program had been ruined by corruption.
In my opinion, lots of things that were happening correctly were not given the kind of attention they should have been.
And she says misinformation around vaccines continued to gain ground.
We saw a consistent misconceptions on Facebook, you know, that went around very, very fast. And after I had left the program, the present government did work with Facebook, and they were kind enough to remove some 30 plus pages that were circulating this propaganda, fake propaganda against the polio vaccine. We needed to make consistent efforts. And any let up in those efforts, and we saw the same misconceptions creeping back into the program.
Today, Pakistan is fighting not one, but two epidemics.
With a record surge in the number of COVID-19 cases in the last 24 hours, Pakistan is facing its biggest challenge.
the nation is suffering from a third wave of COVID-19 infections. Prime Minister Khan contracted the virus himself a few weeks ago, and Pakistan bought 1 million vaccine doses from China last month. It's scheduled to receive 15 million more through COVAX. But the government's vaccination program has still been struggling with delays and limited supplies. And some Pakistani communities are too suspicious of the COVID vaccine to take it. Farooq says anti-vaxxer conspiracy theories are alive and well.
They do not accept that COVID exists. So just imagine having to sell the vaccine to a populace that doesn't believe in the existence of a disease, needs much more hard work than did selling the polio vaccine to the same people.
Just to make matters worse, when Pakistan locked down in March 2020 to contain COVID-19, it temporarily suspended its polio vaccination program. Millions of children missed their doses.
And that's been a huge setback to the gains, the hard gains that the program had made in the past few years.
Despite the recent COVID surge, Pakistan's government launched another nationwide polio vaccination campaign last month. As Pakistan slowly rolls out its COVID vaccination program, Farooq says the country's long fight against polio gives it a unique understanding of the challenges ahead. You'd hate to have to learn the same lessons over and over again, especially when lives are on the line. Are there techniques? Is there a reservoir of expertise created by the polio program that will help when coronavirus vaccine is available to the people of Pakistan?
Absolutely, Ray. I think one of the best things that we have learned from the polio program and what we've done is establish polio assets, which have already been helpful within the trying to deal with the COVID challenge for a country like Pakistan, where our frontline health workers have played a very, very critical role in surveillance activities in the country, in advocacy, creating awareness, in spreading masks and PPEs as and where required. Because as I said, this frontline force of 250,000 brave workers, whom we call our foot soldiers, know the country inside out. They know it better than anyone else living here. So I think one lesson that we've learned is that we need to prepare in advance. Here is a vaccine that, unlike any other immunization that's undertaken in the country, has no age limit. So we need to, in advance, register our critical population. We need to prioritize to ensure that when the vaccine comes, is available in Pakistan, we can immediately invite our critical subgroups of population to health facilities in phases. And for that, we need to do the kind of micro planning that the polio program has always done to assess this critical population, to understand where all they're residing and how we're going to reach them. I think the other way that the lesson that we've learned from the polio program is how employing local female workers who are trusted, who speak the same language, can be a huge asset when it comes to social mobilization and creating awareness and trust for the vaccine. I urge the present Pakistan government to use these polio assets to the best of our advantage to create this social mobilization that is urgently needed. We need to remember that it was a huge challenge to overcome refusals and to create a demand for the polio vaccine, where we had an example of the entire world using the same vaccine to interrupt and eradicate the disease from more than 90% of the world. And now the challenge is going to be far greater, because here is a vaccine that has never been used before in the world. So yes, suspicion around this vaccine is going to be far more than is around the polio vaccine. And thus, I urge again that we need to prepare an appropriate communication strategy, where we need to engage hardcore disease control experts to prepare the ground in advance, using technical information to create awareness out there, to tackle misconceptions and to create demand over here. More often than not, the polio vaccine has also been a supply-driven vaccine, and we haven't been able to create a demand as much as we would have wanted, although we came a long way in improving that. But for COVID, we already see that people in Pakistan, at least, are in denial of the disease itself. I have seen clips of fake news circulating already in Pakistan, where people in the West are being blamed for genetic alterations through these vaccines. And I think this needs to be nipped in the bud right away by governments, by civil society organizations. And we need to work together as one big team, both at the national level, the regional level, and at the international level. And I'd also like to add here that fast-tracking the vaccine has also created its own challenges of communication, where people are questioning whether we compromise certain safety aspects in bringing the vaccine to the market sooner than it should have been brought there, sooner than the time it takes other vaccines to be brought to the market.
That's a particularly tough challenge, given the fact that you rush a vaccine through its critical testing phase in order to save lives, because people are dying all the while. And yet, if you do rush it, that raises the lack of trust in the efficacy and the safety of the vaccine.
Absolutely. And I think that's a challenge the entire world is going to face. And more so, I think, the more urban and literate areas in Pakistan, where I see people raising this objection to the COVID vaccine. But I am an optimist, and I do think that if we do our homework correctly, and if we use and understand high-risk groups, you know, from the polio program, we have a lot of data on social dynamics, on health-seeking behavior that can be used very effectively, not just for the communication strategy around the COVID pandemic, but also service delivery of the COVID vaccine. But Trey, let me add here, we are a country that has proven that we have the capacity, you know, with the help of all our partners, with all political parties here, we did muster the kind of strength and capacity that the program needed. We were being called out as a country for being responsible for global polio eradication. And we were able to stem the tide of uncontrolled transmission and bring the polio case count down considerably. And I think that's the kind of consistent interventions that we require here. Here we require a reinvigorated program like we did for polio way back. We require political commitment here, and it does not just come with the rhetoric of announcing so. When my Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif declared polio a national health emergency, he made sure that this program was given the emergency attention that it required, the kind of funds it required, the kind of attention it required from law enforcement agencies, chief secretaries. And I tell you, this kind of commitment then trickles down to the lowest tiers, to our frontline workers. And I'm sure that if we do the correct planning, the correct homework, if we start planning our communication strategy right now before we allow these fake campaigns to spread too far and wide, I do think we can manage like we did for the polio vaccine.
Aisha Raza Farooq is a member of the Pakistani Senate. During an outbreak of polio in her home country, she was the Prime Minister's point person on polio eradication. Great to talk to you, Senator.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, Ray.
You've been listening to World Affairs, produced in partnership with KQED, with funding from TPG and First Republic Bank, and from listeners like you. If you want to support the program by becoming a member or making a donation of any size, please go to worldaffairs.org/donate. You can also download our podcast. Just search for World Affairs, that's one word, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we want to hear from you. What world events do you think we should be covering? You can send us a voice memo or email us at feedback@worldaffairs.org. Today's episode was produced by Jared Sport and Teresa Katsourilis. Elise Manukian is our associate producer. Joanne Jennings is our executive producer. Tatum Senderbeck and Temba Daniels provided research assistance. Our technical supervisor is Jim Bennett. Our music is from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Philip Young. Thank you for listening.